Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. It's Friday, and that means it's time for our media roundtable, the day we speak with reporters to discuss coverage of the week's news. The tragic shooting and stabbing of students in Isla Vista last Friday is still receiving global attention. We've seen similar coverage after past mass shootings in the United States, but the story tends to die down after a few weeks until the next tragedy takes place. In this case, 22-year-old Elliot Roger went on a stabbing and shooting rampage, leaving 13 wounded and 6 dead. He left a misogynistic manifesto and online videos vowing to punish women for depriving him of sex. And we did a show about this yesterday. You can find it at yourcallradio.org. This has opened a discussion in the media about everyday misogyny and violence against women. And joining us to talk about coverage is Amanda Marcotte. She co-writes the blog Pandagon, writes for Alternet, and is the author of It's a Jungle Out There, the Feminist Survival Guide to Politically Inhospitable Environments. Her latest Alternet piece focuses on how the gun industry preys on paranoid, insecure men like Elliot Roger. Hi, Amanda. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. We're also joined by Soraya Chamali. She's an activist and writer, and her work has appeared in many publications, including Salon, The Guardian, and CNN. Her latest piece asks, when do we talk about unpleasant truths in the wake of Elliot Roger's destruction? Hi, Soraya. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
And ultra-right-wing party gains in last weekend's EU elections have received extensive media coverage here and, of course, in Europe. And the dominant narrative has been that the victory will have far-reaching implications for the future of the European Union. Joining us to talk about media coverage and the significance of these gains is Philip Kleinfeld, a journalist with the New Statesman magazine, who has also written for Haaretz. He covers everything from architecture, finance, culture, and politics. His latest piece is called What Happens to Your Town Once a Far-Right Party Comes to Power. Hi, Philip. Welcome back to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Nice to have you. So as we always do on Friday, we start off on a positive note and give kudos to a reporter who did a good job this week. So, Amanda, why don't we start off with you? What did you see this week that you thought was done well?
Reporters? Oh, that's a very different, that's a good question. You know, I think I really enjoyed Jessica Valente's pieces at The Guardian over this Elliot Rogers shooting. She's been on fire. She's been angry. She's been unapologetic. She's really done a masterful job of drawing lines between just generalized social misogyny, the kind of gross pit of misogyny that has cropped up online, and what happened at that shooting last weekend.
Jessica Valente, she recently got a column in The Guardian, right? She's the founder of Feministine.
Yes. She recently got a column there, and she has been on fire.
All right. Well, we'll definitely talk about that later in the show. And what about you, Soraya? What did you see this week that you thought was done well?
Actually, I think there are a couple of things. One was a piece by Amanda Hess about misogyny and the fact that men also are killed as a result of misogyny, an idea that seems elusive for many people who I think struggle to really understand what misogyny is in terms of a systemic problem. I thought that was very good. I also liked a piece that Elizabeth Plank did about how schools represent targets of opportunity that are very gendered. You could see this after Sandy Hook, but people, I think, really don't think of it in those terms because media doesn't report it in those terms. And so I thought that was an important contribution because she analyzes exactly how it comes to be that girls and women are twice as likely to be killed. And in the killing last Friday night, that was the case because clearly he went to a sorority, which isn't a gender-neutral proposition, which I think a lot of people are looking for.
All right. Thank you. And we'll add links to... Sorry about that. I think we just lost Philip. Did we just lose Philip? Okay. We'll reconnect with Philip. So, well, why don't we start off by talking about this issue, and then we'll bring Philip on later in the show to talk about what's happening in the EU. So, Amanda, first off, we briefly touched on this yesterday, but how did this go from being a story, a predictable story about alone? Oh, did we drop Amanda? Philip, are you with us? Sorry, I think
Soraya's here, but I doesn't sound like either of them are on the line.
Okay, sorry, we're having some phone problems.
No problem.
Soraya, it was really interesting to watch how this quickly transformed from the predictable framing of a lone gunman with a mental illness to one about misogyny and violence against women. I mentioned this yesterday, but to see the word misogyny in headlines from USA Today to CNN is definitely not common. I mean, a conversation has started about what happens to women, everyday harassment, rape, sexual violence, you name it. Why do you think the framing has changed so quickly?
First of all, I don't really think it changed very quickly. I think that this has been building up for a long time. I mean, the work that all of us do, Amanda's been writing about this, Jessica Valenti's been writing about it. There are hundreds of people that do this all the time. Michael Kimmel's been writing about aggrieved entitlement for a very long time. Roxane Gay's been writing about it. I mean, all of us do this, but we tend to do it in progressive circles, in the feminist echo chamber that is the result of the way our media is niched. But in this instance, I think what happened on Saturday represented a real tipping point moment in many ways. And this is what I wrote about in my article. I mean, I woke up Saturday morning, like I think many of us, and saw this news, and what I immediately noticed for my own part, because I always compare news sources, is the difference between coverage in the UK and coverage here. The USA Today did not mention, except for maybe a slight comment, the fact that he had targeted a sorority, that it was gender-based, that he had this misogynistic tract. I and I think thousands of others hopped online and said, wait a minute, this is feeling like propaganda. Why is this not in the news? That got coupled with the Yes All Women hashtag through a series of developments, right, because of the frustration with people not understanding these very regular and resonant language and images that he used, the way women feel these things, this underlying hostility in their lives, avoiding the violence. And that tilted the conversation, I think, into mainstream media because of the sheer volume of response that the hashtag got. Mm.
We often see issues like gun control, mental illness, violence against women treated as mutually exclusive issues. What's really striking you about how the mainstream media are covering this at a time when at least they are using the word misogyny? What strikes you about publications like CNN, The Washington Post,
right,
USA Today?
Well, I've now spoken in a couple of these media, and very often still the question I get is the questions go along the lines of, well, you know, clearly he had mental illness, clearly we should be focusing on gun control. And sometimes the questions then say, well, you know, isn't it a distraction to talk about misogyny?
Hmm.
And my point really consistently, and I think the points of many people, are these are not mutually exclusive things. You cannot deconstruct violence, whether it's guns or knives or, you know, pick your weapon. You cannot separate those from the underlying culture that creates these kinds of tragedies. And to try and isolate mental illness from gun control, from the misogyny that is so, so deeply embedded in our culture, will yield no good results. Now, that doesn't mean, of course, that we shouldn't have people focused on gun control. We clearly, clearly need to legislate our guns. But trying to prioritize these things, trying to carve them up, is not helpful.
Talk a little bit about the misogyny that's so embedded in our culture, because we talked about this yesterday. We talked about the Yes All Women hashtag. I understand that the woman that actually thought about creating the Yes All Women hashtag has been so victimized via Twitter that she's taken her account down. And yet, in a lot of these stories, we're only really scratching the surface here. I mean, definitely not in the feminist blogs and the feminists that have written about this for years. But what about the bigger questions here about the misogyny that is so embedded in the culture? I mean, are media calling up historians or professors who focus on things like how women are affected by war to say, wait a minute, what's really going on here?
I don't think we're there yet. I think what's happening now, which is a good step, is that they're saying the words misogyny, right?
Mm.
However, even then, I've been looking at the way language is being used, at the way things are being reported, and even now we're using euphemisms for sexual violence. We're cutting, for example, I mean, I saw earlier today an example of how the words of a grieving father were edited to take out references to misogyny. So, I mean, I think it's great that we've gotten to the point where that word is even being said in mainstream press, which was simply not the case a year ago this way. It wasn't even the case after Sandy Hook, right? After Sandy Hook, we were having these conversations, as we have been having them for decades, in these circles, but this time it pushed out of that. I don't think we've gotten to the point that you're discussing. You know, I mean, we are still trying to define misogyny for people, and to define it as something that is far, far more impactful than a simple act of violence by a mentally ill person with a gun.
Well, as a writer, how do you define misogyny?
So I think there are several aspects, right? One is that women everywhere are marginalized by male domination in all forms of culture, right? We're systemically cut out of governance, media, entertainment, academia, the arts, technology, sports, name your area, and leadership, prominent public face of those things is male dominated excessively, like, you know, 80 to 85% all male. We're ritually silenced by male domination of religion, and that has lots of consequences, right, for other aspects of life. All of us, as people now understand maybe a little better than they did last week, we incur huge costs and pay a high physical price to avoid constant violence, and violence that is largely based on a kind of idealized idea of masculine dominance. We're objectified in media, right? That's dehumanizing. We are, the way I put it recently last month, after the Boko Haram kidnappings, all women know that everywhere in the world we are considered for sale. We're sellable. That's why there's a market for those children. And so this is a spectrum that we live on, and nowhere on the spectrum do women have bodily integrity. Do they have real autonomy? Are they not subjected to regulation of their reproduction? So that is the way I would categorize misogyny in terms of being systemic.
That is Soraya Chamali. She's an activist and writer. Her latest piece asks, when do we talk about unpleasant truths in the wake of Elliot Rodgers' destruction? Amanda Marcotte co-writes the blog Pandagon, writes for Alternet, and is the author of It's a Jungle Out There. And her latest piece focuses on how the gun industry preys on paranoid, insecure men like Elliot Rodger. And if you'd like to join us, a lot of these issues came up yesterday, but we got a lot of emails after the show just about the media's portrayal of women, the objectification of women in the media. If you have any thoughts on this issue, how can we get to a place in the media where we talk about why misogyny is so embedded in our culture? And if you've seen any pieces that do explore these issues, we'd love to hear from you. And at a time when we really have an opportunity to focus on these issues, how can we make sure that it doesn't just disappear in a couple of weeks? And if you saw something that really struck you this week, we'd love to hear about it. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Soraya, when you were talking about the father whose comments were censored, were you talking about Richard Martinez?
Yes.
Okay, so Amanda, you wrote a piece about guns, and it's been amazing to watch Richard Martinez. His son, Chris Martinez, 20 years old, was one of the victims of last Friday's tragedy. He's become a vocal advocate for gun control. He says he, quote, blames craven, irresponsible politicians and the NRA for his son's death. He said this is now going to be his life's mission. But what is so interesting, and I didn't realize these comments were censored, but I guess it makes sense because the other part of his quote is not being shown over and over again on CNN. And that is, he said, quote, this is a complicated problem. It's a mental health problem. It's a gun violence problem. And it's a problem of violence against women. My family is not going to forget that he originally was targeting young women. I think something has to be said about that, end quote. So why are the media leaving this part out, Amanda?
Well, you know, I think it's largely in part because there's a lot of fear and wariness of being yelled at, you know. There's almost no other way to put it. Like, the misogynists that, the kind of misogynists and right-wingers that, you know, sort of created the online spaces that Elliot Rodgers really kind of developed and radicalized in, are themselves some of the most vindictive, dogged, nasty people on the planet. And if you are brave enough to make these connections in a public place, you're going to hear from them, and you're going to hear from them relentlessly, and they're going to target you, and they're going to threaten you. And I think that we cannot underestimate how just not even wanting to have that conversation, not wanting to attract that negative attention, causes people to self-censor or censor, in this case, you know, the actual victim, family members, or victim's family member, from saying what I think should be fairly obvious in all this.
Your piece about the gun industry notes that nearly half of American households had a gun in the 70s, but since then it sloped downward. Now only 34% of households own a gun. You write that demographic changes are a huge factor, with younger Americans showing very little interest in gun ownership. So how does the gun industry manage to sell so many guns and make money when the customer base for guns appears to be rapidly shrinking?
They target people that have masculine insecurities or other, or often racialized paranoias, and they convince them to buy a lot of guns. There are basically two ways in this country to just grow a market. You can either convince more people to buy your product, or you can convince already loyal customers to buy more of your product. And the gun industry and their associates that call themselves lobbies but are really just helpful, like also marketers like the NRA, have definitely tapped into a kind of subculture of America where there's a lot of men, and I think, you know, often what they are suburban men, or, you know, men who for whatever reason have been completely and totally infatuated with the masculine fantasy, the Clint Eastwood, John Wayne fantasy of just the rugged individual. And they look at themselves, and obviously they're not cowboys, because there are no cowboys in this country, you know, or they're not, you know, mercenaries or whatever. But the gun industry tells them, if you buy like 30 guns, you will feel like you are. And I think that there are men that are insecure enough that they are subjected to that, you know. I'm sorry about that. I have no idea what that is.
No, that's all right. Well, it's interesting because this time around, as far as I know, the NRA has been silent about this shooting.
Yeah. They've been smart. They've been smart about, I think after the Sandy Hook situation, they realized that if they don't start to moderate their image somewhat, they're really, really, really going to start to lose a little bit of power. That enough politicians, I think, after Sandy Hook were willing to stand up to them, and they made some serious missteps in public that made it easier for politicians to stand up to them, that they've been quietly trying to moderate their image. For instance, one of the things the NRA has done is they've quietly changed their opinion about laws regarding background checks and domestic violence, and whether or not men that have been hit with restraining orders or other domestic violence related punishments should have access to guns. They've basically stopped lobbying against efforts to protect the wife beater's quote unquote right to own a gun.
Well, what about the response from politicians? Most of the attention has been on California politicians for obvious reasons, but in Sacramento, Das Williams, a Democrat from Santa Barbara, and Assemblywoman Nancy Skinner from Berkeley, they want to create a, quote, gun violence restraining order using the same process that restraining orders are granted in cases of domestic violence. Assemblywoman Skinner has introduced a bill to allow family members, partners, and friends to have the ability to alert law enforcement if they believe someone poses a threat to themselves or others. Soraya, what really strikes you about the coverage of the police who actually did visit Elliot Rogers and determined that he was fine? He was a polite guy, didn't need to really be brought in for any more questioning. And we got an email from a listener who says, do we foresee any changes in the way the police evaluate people who've been reported as dangerous? Roger gave a lot of forethought to what he wanted to do and charmed the naive deputy at his doorstep. No one calls the police on a family member unless they have real reason to do so, and that fact alone should have caused the sheriff to seek a search warrant to do a thorough search, says the email from Mary. And I read this morning that the cops didn't even look at his YouTube videos.
Well, there's several things. One is that there are lots of problems first with understanding and diagnosing mental illness for professionals who do that. And for police officers who are generally untrained, it's virtually impossible. The second thing is there are implicit biases in all of our systems, right? It's very unlikely to me that if this young man had, for example, been a young black man, mm-hmm. that the response to him would have been the same, right? I mean, we know the way our police and judicial systems function, and that's just an unlikely scenario. The third thing is, as far as the sort of looking at Twitter or understanding the role that those videos played in the development of his identity, that's also very problematic because the police are not well equipped to deal with stalking offline, and they're definitely not well equipped to understand how violence manifests itself online. So, you know, those three things all together attest, I think, to the deficiencies that we have with all of these issues, you know, mental health, gun violence, misogyny. It doesn't, you know, they come together both online and off, and in this case, it seems to me that an inability for our systems to deal with rape and death threats that women face every day online means that police have lowered understanding in general to how a video like that might necessarily have to be legitimate in a case where parents report mental illness.
Let's take a caller before we go to break. Let's hear from Dave and Elsa Bronte. Hi, Dave. Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you this morning and all the callers? I wanted to speak on this. This really interested me because I grew up in a household with a very abusive father, physically abusive to my mother, who passed away in 2002. Mm-hmm. But she and I were extremely close, and she left my father in 1979 with two children, you know, myself, a six-year-old, and my sister, a two-year-old, at a time when that really wasn't done. And even her entire family and friends were telling her, you have to stay with your husband, even knowing he was so physically abusive. It was sort of that culture of you don't leave your husband. But my mom told me from a very early age, you know, you never hit a woman, you show respect to a woman. And I think that culture is lacking, obviously. And, you know, I have a son now as well, who's a teenager, and I do, from a very early age, I never let him play these video games like Grand Theft Auto, where you're actually picking a woman out of her car and hitting her on a video game, or even our superheroes like Batman fighting a woman, and even if it's the enemy, Catwoman, but punching her. And this is just the culture that we have, is women are just subjected to a lower status. And it's very sad, but it's almost like it's getting worse in our entertainment. And even a presidential candidate like Sarah Palin, you know, who's objectified as not her political views, but
Dave, thank you for calling. Her. Sorry to cut you off, but we have to take a quick break. This is your call, and I'll get responses right after the break. The
This is Your Call on KALW, a show that relies on engaged listeners. You can join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. That's toll-free, 866-798-8255. Or you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org, where you'll also find links related to today's show. And coming up at 11 o'clock, a place of world have your say. Today, it's State of the Reunion with Al Letson. Stay tuned.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up on Monday, we'll have a conversation about how we can prevent environmentalists from being attacked and killed around the globe. A new report from Global Witness found that in 2012, 147 environmental activists were killed. This is the highest number ever. So we'll talk about why this is happening, what explains the increase, and what can we do to stop this. That's on Monday. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, it's our Friday Media Roundtable, the day we speak with journalists to talk about coverage of the week's news. And today we are talking about coverage of the tragic shootings and stabbings of students in Isla Vista last Friday. It's receiving global attention. And so we're talking about how the media are covering everything from gun control to mental illness. And now we're seeing misogyny and violence against women at least discussed in the mainstream media. How can we ensure that this story does not die, like so many other stories about gun violence? And also, how can we get the media to go deeper, to really look at why misogyny is so embedded in our culture? And if you've seen anything that really struck you this week, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. And if something that struck you that isn't related to this topic, you can also call in. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or leave a comment on our website, yourcallradio.org. Today, we're joined by Amanda Marcotte. She co-writes the blog Pandagon and writes for Alternet. Her latest piece focuses on the gun industry and how it preys on paranoid, insecure men like Elliot Rodger. Soraya Chamale is an activist and writer. She writes for a number of publications, including Salon, The Guardian, and CNN. And her latest piece asks, when do we talk about unpleasant truths in the wake of Elliot Rodger's destruction? And thank you for calling, Dave. I just wanted to add an email to your call that I just got this morning from a librarian. And she says, part of my job is to catalog the materials, including teen magazines for girls. The selections make my heart sink every time I look at them, with the accent being on how to be pretty, sexy, thin, and popular. Rare is the article that slips in girls' achievements or how to gain and apply practical knowledge for education, jobs, or pointing to girls' and women's activism. Also problematic are the boys' magazines, which feature violence against women made attractive girls and women used primarily as sexually provocative decoration. She says that she tries to speak with colleagues about this, but doesn't have much luck, especially when she speaks with male colleagues about this. Amanda, I mean, this is a conversation that we've had for so long about just the objectification in media, but now that we have this opportunity to try to have it in the mainstream, where do you think the focus should be?
I think we need, what I really am heartened by and what I really think is like a very useful thing that has really cropped up is, for the first time I've been, in all the time I've been doing this, I really started to see mainstream media realize what misogyny really is. And I think, you know, a lot of people I think are skeptical that it is a real problem because they think nobody hates women, or if they do, they're this small group. Why would you hate women? I think it seems so illogical that people just shut down and they don't think about it any further. But now, you know, we have this killer who explained in very clear, in arguable terms, why he hated women. He felt entitled to their affections. He felt entitled to their submission. And when they didn't give it, when they didn't do what he wanted of them, he hated them for it. Once you realize that's actually where misogyny comes from, a sense of entitlement thwarted, I think that everything else starts to fall into place. So now the question is, how do we... Now I think it's easier to see why there are so many misogynists and why there are even, like, female misogynists out there. This this notion that women should be a certain way and that they are somehow failing the world and failing men in particular by not being that way. I think now that we see that that's where the source of all this anger and bitterness and hatred comes from, we can start to have a useful discussion about where did men get the idea in the first place that women owe them sex, submission, laundry, I don't know what it is. Like, it depends on the man, obviously. Childbearing, anything. What, like, where? Why do you think that women owe you anything? Women don't owe you squat, really, except, like, basic decency and respect as a human being, of course. And now that we've got that on the table, I think we can start to more clearly see how that kind of objectification of women in the media and the treatment of women like objects to be owned, possessed, and traded can contribute to misogyny, because there's a gap in what the ideal of what women should be, which is an object, and what women just stubbornly and continually insist that we are, which is people.
Well, we've got full lines. Interestingly, all men calling in today. Let's hear from Edmund in Monterey. Oh, I'm sorry, Richmond. Robert in Richmond. Hi, Robert.
Hi. First of all, I want to thank you very much for the show, Rose, and all the people who are on it. I called in because when I was in law school, I was a 5150 hearing officer and part-time. And I just wanted to add to the information. It's nigh on to impossible to hold somebody against their will unless they've actually committed an act towards hurting another person. It's, you know, so it's one of the difficulties. It's one of the difficulties in a free society that we constantly face. It's all about, you know, the right of the individual to privacy, freedom, and all that kind of those rights, as well as the First Amendment. And I think what we're seeing is the consequence of a, you know, explosion of information and imagery being kind of in conflict with a fundamental concept in America that the state does not have the right to incarcerate or restrain you unless it has evidence of some criminal conduct. So I don't want to go too much further on that. Mm. The other thing I did want to ask...
Well, on that point, though, I think you're making a good point, because I'm sure, you know, in communities of color, they're not going to want the cops to walk into their bedroom to interview them about, you know, whatever is the topic. But what's interesting about this one is in the 140-page manifesto, Elliot Rodger did say... Quote, for a few horrible seconds, I thought it was all over. The cops' possible discovery of the guns and ammo could have, quote, ended everything. So, I mean, he had three semis that he bought in his bedroom. So it's important to point that out. But go ahead.
No, I mean, I didn't follow it that far. And if they had found that material, they very likely could have killed him. I hate to tell you, but they could have read that entire journal, and I don't think that would establish any grounds to arrest him. I'm not a criminal defense attorney, but you know, that's what I think. I guess what I'd be interested in hearing is the other part of this, which is when this kind of an event happens, media does cover it, and it covers it extensively, and I can't help but think that there is some aspect of this, and please don't get me wrong, I'm not lobbying for, you know, closure of coverage, but I do think there's a really difficult tension between the coverage and the fact that an individual like this probably believes he's going to become some kind of a superhero once he's done this kind of an act. You know, this is disturbed people. So I don't have a solution for any of these things. Let me make that clear. Mm. But there's no way I can see what's going on in America right now but as anything besides a fundamental cultural clash between people who realize that violence begets violence and people who still believe, as your talker said, that cowboys and Indians and cowboys and women still, you know, pertain. And I think we have to attack it on every possible front. Early education, I think the movie industry has a responsibility. Wouldn't it be nice to see somebody who is a misogynist, abusing person in a movie change? That would be interesting.
Well, thank you for calling, Edmund. We'll get a response after we take a... Robert. We'll get a response after we take a few more calls. Let's go to Edmund in Monterey. Hi, Edmund.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, you know, I just wanted to say that I don't really think that the San Diego shooting is so much to do with misogyny. I mean, you look at Aurora, Sandy Hook, it's rage in general that takes over people. And so I don't know if this has so much to do with misogyny. Maybe that was his particular issue. But I'm a little bit concerned about blaming everything on men. You know, women and men all have, you know, all have shortcomings equally. Men may express it in a different way. I mean, we notice there's no women doing mass shootings. But I really want to caution this to being all about blaming men, that men have this problem. You know, I'm a guy who really don't really get a lot of girls, let's just say that way. But I remember I was working in a place and all the girls were going out to watch Sex in the City, which is kind of a, you know, kind of a lustful, you know, promiscuous, show. But none of them would date me. I don't really condone violence, but I just want to say that, you know, there's things on both sides of the issue. And the other thing I don't like when people start to talk about these people like freaks, you know, we all struggle with that. I struggle with wanting to take my, you know, lash out at the world with all this hate that I have. You know, I had enough support that I never had to go there. These people that do that, they're just the weakest one.
Mm.
But we all have those things. And I think that people need to understand the pain that people are in.
Yeah.
People can't even talk about it without being stigmatized.
Well, Edmund, I mean, we brought this up yesterday, and the fact that there are a lot of people with deep-seated anger, and they don't know how to deal with it. They don't know what outlets to use. And I think we need to do a show about this, because it's a hard conversation to have, but an important one. And Edmund, let me ask you this. I mean, I think so many things have been festering, and Soraya brought this up earlier. You know, rape in the military, and nothing is done about it. Rape on college campuses. And, you know, we're all so happy that the White House is finally mentioning this. Everyday violence against women, partner-on-partner violence. I mean, so much has been festering. And so it seems like with this situation, women have said, you know what, we're tired of trying to figure out what happened to this one guy. We need to make this about the larger issues. I mean, what are your thoughts about that?
I think you are absolutely right. That you know, these things are intolerable, but I don't want it to become one-sided. I'm afraid that unless you stay objective and realize that there's problems on both sides, male and female, that I think that you're just going to make men be defensive.
Well, and there is the question, how do we bring more men? I mean, it's great that all the men are calling in today talking about this. Soraya, what are your thoughts on Edmund's comments and then how to have this larger conversation with more men?
So I think this is very typical, right, because there is the automatic human response of, no, not me, this is not, I am not that horrible person, and I'm not doing those things, and I don't want that guilt by association, which is completely understandable. But there are a couple of things. One is, there's no gender symmetry in the expression of this violence, mm-hmm. right? I mean, we have 12 murder-suicides a week. 95% of the people doing the killing and killing themselves are men. 85% of the people being killed are women. You know, all of our mass shooters, but one for the last 30 years, have basically been angry young white men. I mean, the reason we keep saying misogyny is because it is the way our culture expresses itself, and we see that in extreme examples. It becomes much more obvious in these extreme examples. But when you talk about people not being able to express pain, that is very important, because men who are aggrieved, in this case there's an expression, aggrieved entitlement, act in these ways largely out of the pain that they have, born of the fact that they're failing to meet masculine ideals as imposed by society. And among those ideals is this idea that they cannot emote, that they cannot share their feelings, because that is a feminization, that makes them weak. And that, too, is an effect of misogyny, right? Because if you are automatically weakened by association with being feminine, that fundamentally reflects a kind of idea that being feminine is bad, that it degrades men. And all of this is very complex and all related to the violence that we're seeing.
Amanda, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I want to object to Edmund's characterization of talking about misogyny as a bad ideology, misogyny as a bad idea, as somehow man-bashing. First of all, not all men are misogynists. I don't think that we should assume a priori that because someone is male, he must and always will have resentment and anger towards women for not giving him what he wants. The only people I've ever noticed who think misogyny bashing is man bashing are often hold misogynist views themselves, and it never occurs to them that there might actually be men out there who don't see things their way. I don't think feminists are man bashers. What feminists are women who say men can and often are already better than that.
Well, we've got an email from Maria who says that Jane Fonda recently spoke about keeping sons emotionally literate and teaching them a hand and heart connection. She writes, I do believe this is truly the root of the problem. We have a lot of boys and men walking around with heavily repressed emotions because our culture says to be a man and men should not show their emotions. This leads to violence, misogyny, and anger. Males need to be taught at a young age that they can feel and show emotion, and that is a human element. That's from Maria in Santa Cruz. And thank you for the email, Maria. And you can email us, feedback@yourcallradio.org, or give us a call. We've got one line open at 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. What really struck you about media coverage of the tragedy that happened last Friday that left 13 wounded and 6 dead? 22-year-old Elliot Roger left a misogynistic manifesto, 140-page manifesto, and many online videos vowing to punish women for depriving him of sex. And we're talking about this today with Soraya Chamali, an activist and writer. Her work has appeared in Salon, The Guardian, and CNN. And Amanda Marcotte co-writes the blog Pandagon, writes for Alternet, and is author of the book It's a Jungle Out There, The Feminist Survival Guide to Politically Inhospitable Environments. And thank you for calling it in, Edmund. Let's go next to Gabriel in San Francisco. Hi, Gabriel. Welcome
hi,
to the show.
This is Gabriele.
Oh, hi, Gabriele.
Listen, the problem, if you think the men we're going to change, they will never do. Because, especially in this country, because they don't give, you know, they don't have what they ask for. First of all, because they don't know how to ask. Second, it's up to you, women, to change it. Yesterday, by mistake, I've been in this country 40 years, and I never heard about Jerry Springer. And yesterday, by mistake, I pushed a button on the TV, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. Preposterous.
Jerry Springer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then I was told that mainly women watching this guy. Why they do that? Why do women watch a program like that? It's absurd. Think about the school, elementary school. Boys are treated much better than girls, and most of the teachers are women. And yet, boy, it goes away. We think that girl will never go away. You know, why the teacher will do that? Why they treat women better? No, boy better than women, than girls. I mean, religion is the same thing. I mean, think of Catholic religion. There is it's an absolute monarchy, and one guy rules everything. No women. Actually, there's Cardinal Bertone, which was a Secretary of State, is on the news because he's spending so much money to renew his apartment. But that, for me, wasn't the news. The news is that he got 5 nuns taking care of him. I mean, cleaning, taking care of him. 5 nuns. Why do they do that?
Well,
it's up to you. You have to change the thing. Men will never change. So it's up to you to put out with this thing or not.
Well, thank you for calling in, Gabriela. Soraya, what are your thoughts on that?
This gentleman will not get any argument from me in terms of religion and women. I don't think he probably would from Amanda either. I really feel strongly about this. I mean, all you can do is, I think, personally decide whether you're going to support these institutions. And we all have to live with these institutions, and these institutions are all dominated by norms that continue to perpetuate male dominance. But I can choose not to be part of a certain faith, which I have done. I mean, I left Catholicism when I was 11, and they said I couldn't be a priest. I'm like, I'm out of here, right? This is not healthy for me. It's not going to be healthy for anyone in my family. And I couldn't take my parents with me because I was their child. But, I think women need to understand that there are many, many different ways, and we all have to do it, that we adapt to sexism. And some things are more out of our control than others, but there are definitely things that are in our control, and that's a big one.
All right. Thank you for calling in, Gabriela. Let's go next to Nan in Santa Cruz. Hi, Nan. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. You know, I find it really interesting that so many men are calling in, and I just want to give a little experience that I had very early on when video games very, very first came in. I was involved heavily in that field, and I was appalled at how here is this wonderful technology coming on the market, and what are they going to use it for? Extremely violent games, and mostly games of violence against women. So basically, I got out of that field because it was very, very hard to make a living if you did not want to participate in some sort of violence against women. And I think it is on all levels. It is in movies. It was the same thing on TV. It is the same thing. And if you don't want to participate on that level of violence, you're not going to have a career. I want to make just one more point about the man who called and said men express their anger differently. Mm. Well, why do you feel when you express your anger differently that it is okay to kill women? I think men need to look in their heart and look at everything that they're exposed to and maybe have a little bit of a thought of, where is my sense of entitlement coming from? Where is that coming from? And that's what I want to say.
And Nan, did you ever bring up your concerns when you worked at the video game company?
Oh, yeah. Well, I didn't work for the video game. I was a contractor.
Okay.
So I worked with many, many video game companies. I mean, it was pretty amazing. Right on the cusp of this amazing technology, being a woman in that field, I was instantly confronted with, like, extremely sexually violent games, extremely violent games. And most of it, all of it, I would say, predominantly wound somewhere around doing something bad to women. So I really, that's why I got out of the field. There was no way to make a living. I don't even feel in Hollywood there's a way to make a living without participating in violence against women on some level.
Well, thanks for calling in, Nan. We have an email from Eddie from Monterey who says, gender differences, attitude, and what our society has structured. In school and the media, it will continue to perpetuate the inequalities and misogyny. The question is, what do we do about it? Well, thank you for emailing, Eddie. Let's hear next from Andre in San Jose. Hi, Andre. Hello, Andre? No. Well, and let me ask you that, Soraya, where do you see this conversation going now that we have this opportunity to really at least try to have a conversation about the real issues?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I write because I want to share the information that I have with other people in the hopes that they will look at their own lives, see what steps they might be able to take to change things. I do the activism that I do for the same reasons. So, you know, there's no shortage of fronts that we can move on, and they probably necessarily have to happen all at once. But again, I will go back to the individual steps people can take to challenge institutions so that they speak up, they speak openly about their own experiences. They talk to teachers, they talk to clerics if they happen to be religious, they talk to employers. And there are risks to all of this. There are risks to personal interactions, there are risks to jobs, and those are understandable. But I think it's really important that people are open to these ideas, they understand how they function in the day-to-day course of our lives, and how what some seemingly small things, the ways in which they really add up to create these systems of injustice.
Mm. Amanda, what would you add to that? And what can we do to make sure this story just doesn't disappear in a few weeks, which is what usually happens?
Well, there's only so much we can do on the latter part. But you know what? My hope is that the next step is that now that, like, I think everyone has a much, much better grasp of what misogyny is and how it plays out in our society, I think, you know, it would be nice to start talking about how fighting it, getting rid of it, is not just a woman's job. And, in fact, if it's up to women alone, it's never going to happen, because the kinds of guys who objectify and marginalize women don't care what women have to say, and it's a vicious cycle. You know, things are only going to change if men also join along with women and start to speak up. If men start to say, look, you know, when they, men need to start pushing back against their male friends, colleagues, relatives, who say things like they're entitled to women's attention, or women are this and men are that, or perpetuates any stereotypes. If men need to be the ones, if they hear the word slut, they need to be the ones to shut that down and say, hey, don't police women's sexuality. And I think if men can start to send to each other the message that what makes you a quote-unquote man is not oppressing, hurting, and policing women, but, you know, being a good, decent person, I think that we might actually get somewhere in fixing these problems.
What are you working on right now, and how do you think journalists can really guide this process?
That's a really good question. I think that the question, you know, I think what I saw a lot of people doing, and I want to see more of this, is having conversations where we look a little bit more deeply into the causes of violence and the causes of these sorts of things, because everything tends to be, like, there's so much fear, I think, of, like, getting any deeper than saying X, Y, and Z happens, and talking about maybe just a few kind of Band-Aid solutions, such as, you know, being a little bit more careful to take threats of violence seriously, which I think would be helpful, but is definitely not going to catch most of them. Mm. And instead talk more thoroughly about why it is that so many men in this country feel entitled to hit, rape, and even kill women for not doing what they want them to do. And I think if we start to frame that question that way, if we say, why do, and instead of just treat them like they're out of control monsters, as if they're just sort of angry men and there's just no explanation for it, we need to talk more in depth about where they got the idea in the first place that they have any right to tell a woman what to do. And I think that that will help.
Well, we are definitely going to continue following this. And if any of you have show ideas about how to continue this, we'd love to hear from you. Feedback at yourcallradio.org. Amanda Marcotte writes the blog Pandagon and writes for Alternet. Soraya Chamali is an activist and writer. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And because we had so much interest on this shooting, we will definitely bring back the segment on the elections in the European Union. Thanks for listening. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. Prevent environmentalists from being attacked and killed around the globe. On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation about a recent Global Witness report called Deadly Environment, the dramatic rise in killings of environmental and land defenders. In 2012, 147 environmental activists were killed. So why is this happening? What explains the increase? And what's being done to stop it? Join the conversation on the next Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To sign up for our podcast or newsletter, or to share the show on Facebook or Twitter, visit yourcallradio.org. Malihe Razazan and Ali Budner produce the show. Matt Martin is our executive producer. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer. And Debbie Kennedy is the studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.